It's a great honor to be able to welcome the Rosh Yeshiva to have Rabbi Bezalel Radinsky with us. As I mentioned earlier today, before he gave a phenomenal shiur as part of our afternoon kollel, it's a great zchus, it's a great privilege for our community. Rabbi Radinsky is the Rosh Yeshiva at Or Reuven in Muncie. He is the author of the very popular series of Svarim Mishkan Bezalel, but he's becoming increasingly more well known not only for being an extraordinary Talmud Chacham, for his lumdus and analytic ability, but for being able to give a hashkafas achayim, for his being able to inspire and invigorate a positive attitude towards life, and to be able to take the Torah's timeless principles and apply them in a very contemporary way that we can relate to, that can inspire our everyday living. I want to express our gratitude to Rabbi Simi Shabtai, our Rosh Beis Medrash, for organizing this wonderful visit all day, the second shiur with the Rosh Yeshiva, for all he does for our Belazon Beis Medrash program. And it's a great honor and privilege. I want to thank the Rosh Yeshiva for joining us today, not only giving two shiurim, just interacting with some of our young men and night seder earlier. And as I said earlier today, we look forward to be able to welcome Rabbi Radinsky back for a Shabbos filled with shiurim. This is just the appetizer, the first time. Hopefully the weather's a little bit warmer than Muncie, so we can inspire maybe next winter to come back for another visit. So without any further ado, please rise and join me in welcoming Rabbi Bezalel Radinsky Shlita.
Good evening. I'm really continuing the theme that I began earlier. Just now we're going to the Geula stages. I want to reiterate what I mentioned earlier, which is that the uniqueness of this community, and I know it from the people that I'm very close with, the elder people that I'm close with, and the younger crowd. I have my beloved Talmud, Michael Lupin, as part of this community. And as I mentioned earlier, the range of people that are connected to this shul and the positivity that's felt by all is something that really is envious to Klal Yisrael. And I have to give really a standing Akar Sateva from Klal Yisrael to the Rav for creating and maintaining that kind of environment. So the topic we chose, because we're in a period now really of Geula, as we mentioned earlier, Purim and Pesach, these are Zmanim of Geula. So we chose a topic to talk a little bit about Mashiach. And I wanted to really capture both the Halacha element of waiting for Mashiach, as well as the Hashkafic concept of waiting for Mashiach. Both of them are quite complex. We know that the Rambam, he establishes 13 principles, which are obviously based on Chazal, and those 13 principles act as the Constitution. Even though the American Constitution is a little shaky, but the Yud Gimel Ikrim, that constitution has remained the same since the birth of our nation. And the Rambam states that those 13 principles are so absolute that one who denies any of them is outside of the union of Klal Yisrael. So they're very, very significant and foundational to who we are. And most of them are really straightforward belief concepts which every Jew has to believe in. And they're pretty basic. They're pretty basic. Until we get to Mashiach. When we get to Mashiach, the whole thing changes. Because there, we veer away from a belief system into an emotional state. And so it's an emotional system that you have to buy, not that you have to buy into, that you have to feel. And that's very hard. That's an issue that's already been raised by many of the Rishonim. Whenever you find a mitzvah that relates to an emotion, how could the Torah command you on an emotion? The Torah can command an action. The Torah can't command an emotion. Either you have it or you don't. The Torah could tell you to try to motivate yourself, to inspire yourself, but to say that. And the Rishonim deal with that in many places, both in the positive mitzvahs and in the negative mitzvahs. We have a mitzvah, don't be jealous. Okay? So many of the Rishonim discuss, how could the Torah say, don't be jealous? How could the Torah say, don't be jealous? It's a feeling. The Torah could say, don't respond to your jealousy. How could the Torah say, don't be jealous? And there's many answers given to that question. Amongst them, there are Rishonim, and in fact, it's the majority of the Rishonim, who actually reject the whole concept of jealousy as we interpret it. And they hold that jealousy is not something that you're really going against unless your jealousy reaches a level that you're prepared to act on it. You're prepared to say, well, I'm actually going to try to get what my friend has. It's not just that I'd like it. Now, we know there's a law called lo sachmos, which we read it to mean desire, but the acceptance of the mainstream of the Rishonim is that you only go against that by actually doing an action to get it, and that's the way it's brought down in the halachim in the Shulchan Aruch. Then there's another prohibition called losis aveh is clearly a step down even to desire it, but even there, again, because of the challenge that I mentioned, that how could the Torah tell you what to feel, there are many who interpret even losis aveh to be addressing the issue of a person planning to do something to get what his friend has. Let me see how I can get it. So basically, going to a practical place, taking it from emotional, going to practical. You should love Hashem. Okay? That also is a mitzvah of emotion. If you look at the Rambam explains it to mean that it's a dictate for a person to do things. And the Rambam goes on to say how you reach that. What you could do to inspire yourself to love Hashem. It's the same question, right? How could you be commanded to feel something? Either you feel it or you don't feel it. But here we get coming to the principles of our belief. The principles of our belief are very straightforward. Believe in Tchiyas HaMeisim, believe that the Torah was given in Sinai, believe that the Torah won't be changed. Believe in the coming of Mashiach. When it comes to the mitzvah of believing in the coming of Mashiach, the Rambam adds a spin. It's not just to believe in the coming of Mashiach. Achakelo. You have to wait for him. You have to be sitting there waiting for Mashiach to come. I remember many years ago, I heard a woman talking to my wife whose husband wasn't doing well in business. And he had some very good years, and then he had some bad years. And the way she described her frustration was, she said, the way my husband is doing now, Mashiach can shekumen. Let Mashiach come. Meaning it's only going to get better. That was her gut feeling. That was her gut feeling. When I heard it, it hit me. Because it's clear that it's very hard to dictate a feeling of waiting for Mashiach. How many of us could say we sit there waiting for Mashiach? Waiting for Mashiach. But the Rambam integrates that with the principle of belief. Because he says, V'chol mi she'enim ma'amid b'b'yosei. Or she'enim mechakeh. Or he's not waiting for Mashiach to come. He's missing this foundation, this principle of B'yos Mashiach. So this really boggled the minds of many. What does this mean? That you have to be waiting for Mashiach. And of course, if we delve into it deeper, okay, it's very hard to even understand why that would be a demand of a human being. Because how could you connect to something you never ever had? None of us can even imagine what Mashiach is going to be like. None of us can imagine what life will be. Damirayim have a machloikis. Damavayim have a whole discussion. What is the world going to look like when Mashiach comes? So nobody could even give you a straight answer about that without getting into a machlokes, into a whole debate. How could somebody be waiting for something that they never saw or envisioned or can even imagine? And you're telling me that if I'm not waiting for that, if I had it, if I'm a Mashiach survivor, okay, I lived in an era where there was a Messiah and I lost it, So then, at least we can conceptually understand that you could be somebody who's waiting for Mashiach. You're waiting. Something you had, something you connected with, and now you're missing it. So we can understand. But the concept of waiting for Mashiach, when it's something you never experienced, it seems to be that it's not even realistic for us to expect one to have that. But again, this is the way the Rambam brings it down. Now I will read you just a short statement by Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim Brisk, who was a Rav in Brisk in Europe, and he discusses the importance of the 13 principles. And he actually incorporates this waiting, this Rambam with waiting. And he goes on to say how important these 13 principles are. He says, Ki ben Yisrael, he says, a Jewish person, Hayodea es Hayud Gimel Ikrei Emunu Mamin Bahem, who knows the 13 principles and believes in them, Elo Shenela Mimenu Harbe Mitzvahs. He doesn't know about anything else. He doesn't know about other mitzvahs. He only knows the 13 principles. He has a sitter. He has an art scroll sitter. He doesn't even have an art scroll chumash. All he's got is his Hebrew library is an art scroll sitter. And the art scroll sitter has the 13 principles. And he goes through them and he believes them. Says the Rambam, a scholar he's not. Says the Rambam, a Talmud Chacham he's not. Hagam, he says, Ein lo chelek b'yedias ha-Torah. He doesn't have knowledge in Torah. Maybe he's an Amoritz. Omnom hu b'chlal Yisrael ha-maminim. He's included in the union of the Jewish people, the believers. He's a believing Jew. And that's very high. That's a high level. Avol im ne'la mimenu, he says. But if you have an individual that's missing, Echod miyud gimel ikra. One of the 13 principles. So this guy's a scholar, he went through everything. Happens to be, he found the Ani Mamans boring. He never pursued them. Okay? Never pursued it. So he says, Rakhosolo, he's missing one. He says, Eilo Emuna, he's lacking the fundamentals of belief. Vareyu Apikoros. Could you imagine? So you got here an accomplished scholar sitting there who knows everything, happens to be the 13 principles, something he never went into. He's missing one of them. So he's a non-believing Jew. He's out of the union. Okay. Then you have a guy on the other side who his total knowledge is the Yud Gimel Ikra. He's a believing Jew. So these words of Reb Chaim are trying this. He uses this to explain because the Rambam is very unclear. The Rambam says if somebody denies one of these 13 principles, he's a non-believer. So Reb Chaim asks, a Jew is not allowed to deny any element of the Torah. If a Jew says, I don't believe in Bereishis, I don't believe Eloh told us Noach, he's also a non-believer. So Reb Chaim says, that's his point here, is that a person can be ignorant and yet a believer. But in the 13 principles, we don't have the liberty to be ignorant. That concept doesn't exist. The 13 principles, you must master them, and you must believe them in order to be a believing Jew. So the concept of Tinik Shenishba, and you didn't know, and what that's the point of Reb Chaim. Very powerful words from Reb Chaim. There's a big debate about them, but that is Reb Chaim's understanding. But he goes on in this shiur that he wrote, he goes on to say that you must wait for Mashiach. You must wait. V'lochein, mi she'eno mamen v'bias ha-Mashiach, he doesn't believe. O she'eno mechake, or he's not waiting for Mashiach to come, he's not a believer. Now, this is almost impossible to grasp. So because of this problem, there's been a major debate how to understand this Rambam. There's been a practical approach that Reb Chaim's son, the Brisker Rav, took. A practical approach. The practical approach of the Brisker Rav is also difficult based on the way I presented the question. The Brisker Rav says, the waiting element is just proof of whether you believe. He says, if somebody really believed in Mashiach, they got to be waiting for it. So the way he's almost, the way the Brisker Rav is understanding what is going on here, is it's almost like the Rambam is performing a self-test in your belief system. In other words, this one has a, we have a test whether you believe in this one. Are you waiting for it? You don't believe it. That's the way the Brisker Rav read this Rambam. So the Brisker Rav sees it not as another requirement, but as a proof on the level of your belief. The problem that I have with this Brisker Rav is I would understand it if we were talking to Mashiach survivors. But since we're not talking to Mashiach survivors, we're talking to somebody who never saw, met, or can even grasp what it's going to be like. So the fact that he's not waiting is just because he's just not there. He was never brought there emotionally to be able to wait. I asked the congregants in my shul every year on Tisha B'Av night the same question. Chazal tell us that in order for one to merit the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, they have to also mourn over the Beis HaMikdash. And Chazal tell us, Kol She'ena Misabel al Yerushalayim. If heaven forbid somebody doesn't mourn over the Beis HaMikdash, he will not be privileged to see its rebuilt. That's the statement, the raw statement. Okay, so I ask the same question. I say, my friends, how can we demand for somebody to mourn over something they never had? Remember that question. How much could you demand? And I make an analogy. Imagine you go over to an individual who never knew that they had a great grandmother somewhere in Europe that was alive. And you go over to them and you say, you know, Rabbi Yitz, I want you to know there's a great grandmother of yours in Krakow who was alive. He goes, wow. But I have bad news for you. She died today. So of course you'd be disappointed. But would it be fair to ask this individual why they're not in a state of mourning? Why aren't you like in a state of Shiva? It's not a state of Shiva. They never knew the person existed. They never connected to them on any emotional level that they could feel mourning. So that's the question that I ask about the Churban Beis HaMikdash. How could you tell somebody to mourn over something they never had? You could tell them to try. You could say, make effort, read books, listen to Shiurim, try. But to tell somebody who's not mourning that's it, they will not be privileged to see it rebuilt. That's a very difficult thing. So I'm asking the same question on the Brisker Rav, who's telling us that if you're not waiting, it means you don't believe. I believe. I fully believe in every word of the Torah, but I can't honestly say I'm anticipating something that I never felt. I can't say it. So I want to try to get a clearer halachic approach, but more so, I want to also get to what the hashkafa demand here is. What's the demand from a Jew, from a hashkafa? And I'll share with you a fascinating question that one of the Chofetz Chaim's students in Rotten asked him many years ago. He asked him, he came from a whole different angle. He didn't know what to his Rebbe. He said, Rebbe, I just learned the Gemara in Shabbos. And the Gemara in Shabbos says there's going to be days, Hine Yomim Bohem, there's going to be days where they're going to be called Yomim She'ein Bohem Chefetz. And what does the words Ein Bohem Chefetz mean? Chefetz could mean desire, Chefetz could mean purpose, has many interpretations. The way Chazal explain it is that when Mashiach will come, there won't be a battle between bad and good. There'll be an element of good. There'll be goodness in the world. And there'll be a desire to do what's right. And therefore, there won't be friction. Not amongst people. And not internal friction between good and bad. People are going to want to do the right thing. So he turns to his Rebbe. He says, Rebbe, Lefum Tzara Agra, according to how much a person has an inner battle, that's how much reward you get. Okay, a battle is not a bad thing, as long as you win, right? Battle between good and evil is is a very positive thing, provided that you win. One of the best jokes I heard on this matter of the Yetzer Hara, Yetzer Tov, was from a Hasidish patron, Hasidish comedian. His name is Yanko Miller. So he talks about his Sheva Brachas. See, he said right after he got married, he wanted to impress his father-in-law. His father-in-law was a rabbi. He used to wake up early in the morning. So he decided that the first night after his wedding, he's waking up 5 o'clock in the morning, and he's going to be in the Beis Medrash next to his father-in-law, giving the shir. He's going to be there, a new, brand new groom, up bright and early in the shul. It didn't happen, needless to say, but he says, he set his alarm clock for 5 a.m., the alarm clock goes off, he shuts it off, the alarm clock goes off again, shuts it off again, he says, and then all of a sudden the inner battle starts. He says, the Yetzer Hara is telling him, you're a chas. What's with you? You belong in bed. That's just a question. You're allowed to be in bed. You belong in bed. Bed is your place. The Yetzer Tov says, listen, you're not just a regular guy. You're a rabbi's son-in-law. You got to impress. It's an embarrassment to your father-in-law. You got to come late to shul. Get up. And he says they were fighting. And he was getting frustrated. He says, why can't you guys fight outside? You're keeping me up. And they're fighting. And he said, I want you to know, he says, I'm proud to say the Yetzer Tov won. He says, but it took 5 hours. But then the Yetzer Tov won. He won at the end. 10 o'clock in the morning, I got up. The battle between good and evil is actually a positive thing, because that's really the schar, the reward that one gets is overcoming. You know, Reb Chaim Volozhin always used to say, people are tzaddikim to their best friends. I always tell the people in my shul before Purim, this is coming up, I say, when you send your mishloach manos, don't send it to your best friend. You could send it to your best friend, no, I have no problem with that. But send it to the person that's not expecting it. The purpose of Mishloach Manos, according to many, is lahagdil rei, to increase friendship. Instead, it becomes a politics on its own. Who sent to who? And you didn't send to me. You did send to me. Why didn't you send to me? I mean, you know, there's all kinds of Mishloach Manos. There was a rabbi there that the shul was trying to get rid of. This is a true story, in New Jersey. And they were working for years, and he had one of these contracts. They couldn't get rid of him. At the end, they decided to send him Mishloach Manos. They sent him a Shloach Manos. His wife opened it up, and two rats emerged from the basket. And he left. He left the community. That wasn't a Shloach Manos. That didn't give friendship in that Mishloach Manos. Mishloach Manos has to give friendship. That's the point of it. To bring friendship. And really, that's where we get reward. When we so Chaim Volozhin says, when you stop and you give that person a lift, who you may have uncomfortable feelings with. That's where the schar is. When you're doing your best friend a favor, that's almost selfish. It's something you want. It makes you feel good. Many people say, I'm a Baal Chesed tremendously. It's only that one guy I can't stand that I don't do anything for. But that's where your mitzvah is. Your mitzvah is that guy. So the Talmud turns to the Chofetz Chaim. He says, Rebbe, he says, why is it that I should be waiting for Mashiach? Mashiach's going to come. There's going to be an overwhelming amount of goodness out there. Everybody's going to be wanting to do good. They're going to be running to the shuls, running to the shiurim, running to do chesed. There'll be no lashon hara. What's in it for me? Why should I be waiting for that? What a penetrating idea that he thought of. And I heard this from Rav Kaf, who was actually in Radin. He told me he knew the student that asked this to the Chofetz Chaim. He asked the Chofetz Chaim, he said, Rebbe? And the Chofetz Chaim looked at the student, he said, that's a gevaldig kasha. You're asking a great question. And he gathered the whole yeshiva together to give them an answer. And I'm going to share with you what his answer was, because I think it connects to the point I want to bring out. So first let's resolve this halachically, then we'll get to what the Torah really is asking of us. Halachically, I believe that there's a different message in what the waiting, what what not waiting means, just to relieve all of you, because I'm sure many of you are thinking, I don't know if I'm waiting for Mashiach, really. Am I sitting there waiting for Mashiach? So, halachically speaking, there's a whole different approach how to explain the Rambam. And that is, with the idea that I heard from Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky Zatzal, and Rav Eliashiv Zecher Tzadik Livracha felt the same way. And that was, that somebody once came and asked the Alter of Slobodka, who was a great, great leader of yeshiva in Europe, who many of the Rosh Yeshivas that later blossomed in the world, both here and in Israel, are students of the Alter of Slobodka. Rabbi Kotler, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, even Rosh Shach went through Slobodka. But many, many of the senior Rosh Yeshivas of the last 70 years were Slobodka students. The Alter of Slobodka said, when he spoke about this, he said that they asked him, the halacha is you have to believe that Mashiach could come any day, right? Achakelo, b'chol yom sheyavo, every day. So a student came over to him and he said, Rebbe, he said, we know that before Mashiach comes, Chazal tell us, hinei anochi sholeach lochem es Eliyahu HaNavi, lifnei bo yom agod. Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come first. And Chazal interprets that as, there'll be a few days, there'll be a 3-day, one Chazal says 6 days, there's going to be like an introductory period for Mashiach to come. So this Talmud asked the Alter Slobodka, so does that mean that today, I don't have to believe that it'll come within the next 3 days, because Eliyahu didn't come yet? The simple reading of the Rambam is I have to believe today that Mashiach could come today. But Eliyahu Navi didn't come. So the Alter Slobodka said, you have to believe, as it says in the Rambam, every day Mashiach could come. Today. Hayom in Bekolo Tishmo. Today, this moment. Basically, no mix swimming, he'd come today. Hayom in Bekolo Tishmo. Come right now. He says like this. He says. So the student turns to me, he says, Rebbe, but what are you going to do with the Medrash that says that Eliyahu Navi has to come 3 days before? He looks at him straight like this. He goes, Mashiach will answer that question. Mashiach will answer that question. Now, if you look in the Rambam writes that in the Mishnah Torah, besides for the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah writes in Sanhedrin, in Perek Chelek, he writes that when a Jew has to believe that Mashiach could come any time, and he should never make a cheshbon, he should never make a thought and a calculation, why now it's not the time. You know, many times people could think, you know what, this generation, forget about it. It's not possible. There's too much this, or there's not enough that. Or it's not. This is not the time of Mashiach. This is not, Mashiach's not coming now. Says the Rambam, a person has no right to make those calculations. Mashiach could come at any time. One of my most favorite Ramchals is one of his Talmidim came to me and he said, Rebbe, how could Mashiach come early? We know there are two times for Mashiach. He could either come be'ita, like the Gemara says, at the end of time, or achishena, he could come at any time. If we do the right thing, we could usher him in early. We could usher him in now, right now. So one of the Talmidim of the Ramchal asked his Rebbe, he said, Rebbe, I don't understand. Abaye the Rava couldn't do that. Okay? The Goyanim couldn't do that. The great Rishonim couldn't do that. The great Achronim couldn't do it. The Vulnagon couldn't do it. The Chavetz Chaim didn't do it. Right? So this Talmud of the Ramchal, who didn't have yet the leaders that we've had in the last 100 years, but he said, our generation is going to have Mashiach. The Ramchal pointed out to him a Chazal, Yalkut Shimon, that says that Hashem looks at each generation and he looks at that generation and he decides how much light are the Jewish people providing for that generation. Says the Ramchal, the darker the world, the easier it is to bring Mashiach. The crazier the world out there is, the more light that we are bringing to the world. I'm not a Lubavitcher chassid. I mean, I'm a chassid of everybody, of all Klal Yisrael. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe once told Prime Minister Netanyahu, when he was a UN ambassador, he went into the Lubavitcher Rebbe, And Lubavitch Rebbe told him when he was appointed the UN ambassador, I think it was in 78, way back, okay? He told him, you are going into, he called the UN, a hall of lies. It's one big hall of lies. It's a hall of darkness. You be the candle. He told him, you be the candle. He told him, when a room is so black, one candle provides a lot of light. It was a great idea. He said, one candle, in a room that's that dark, one candle could light up. The Ramchal told his Talmud, there's going to be a generation, they're going to think our generation, Mashiach, but the Jewish people, living in a time like that, being able to hold up the light, look at the generation we're in today. I would not be surprised at all if Mashiach will be unveiled in our generation. Because the world is so decayed. The morality, what's right and what's wrong, what's being fought for on a governmental levels, what's becoming the theme of presidential campaigns, is so low. It's who can put onto their platform something that's even lower. Soon they're going to be matter monkeys, unions with monkeys. And this becomes your greatness. I'm even better than you. I'm better than you. To me, monkeys are beseder. Right? So the Jewish nation has the ability in a dark time to be the light. And that's what the Rambam is saying. Mashiach could come at any time. And don't make cheshbonos. Don't think, well, if he didn't come in that generation, he surely, precisely what you're thinking may actually be the reason why he will come. Because in your generation, your nation is providing more light than in any other generation. And Mashiach could come. The Rambam precisely in his Pirush Mishnayos is saying, don't make calculations. Do not make calculations. You believe he can come at any time. So the terminology waiting means accepting the possibility that Mashiach could come at any time. That's what it means. It doesn't mean, it's not talking to an emotion as much as an acceptance of a reality. And that's what chikui means to believe, to anticipate that there can be a coming of Mashiach at any time, and do not make any calculations in your mind to think, oh, this is not the generation. This is the generation. This can be the generation. And that is, if we take that approach that they took, that the Alter Slobodko, which I feel, if you would all look in the Rambam, you would see that this approach is a very sound approach, then it puts us in a much better footing halachically. Still in all, we do find many chazals. So although I believe that every Jew that believes that Mashiach can come at any time is considered a believing Jew, whether he's emotionally pumped for it or not, still in all, there are countless chazals that say that there's an element of tzipis alishu. When a person comes up to Bezen Shomala, they're going to say, were you waiting? They're going to say, were you waiting? So we see there is a concept of one, of an individual waiting for Mashiach. Really, really wanting, having a yearning for Mashiach to come. And I want to tell you what the Chafetz Chaim told his yeshiva, and tie it in really to this week's parasha, and to give you just something to walk away with besides for a halachic approach, an emotional approach, how to walk away with this. In this week's parasha, we find again, it's not the first time, and it's not the last, that Shabbos is integrated in the building of the Mishkan. So we know that Shabbos is brought down numerous times in conjunction with the building of the Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara and the Taras Koyanim and many other Mamre Chazal say that the reason for that is to teach us that Shabbos has to be upheld even at the detriment of the Beis Hamikdash, meaning Beis Hamikdash has to be put on standstill not to build it on Shabbos. But that only explains perhaps one time. But there's a redundancy of Shabbos being connected to the Beis HaMikdash, to the degree that the 39 melachos, the 39 acts of violation of Shabbos, are learnt from the Mishkan. And anything that was the Gemara says, anything that was in the Mishkan, chashiva, anything that was in the Mishkan, is what is prohibited on Shabbos. And in as much what we're doing is lacking that, it's not called a malacha. It's lacking in malacha. In fact, in our day and age, there's much debate on the way the technology is working. What is a malacha? What's not a malacha? Because now there's so many sensors. And this is becoming more and more of a problem. That's not what this venue is here to discuss. But this is becoming more of an issue. I get calls from people now before Shabbos that are stuck in hotels where everything is sensed. That means they walk in the room, the air conditioning goes off. It goes on. They walk out, the air conditioning goes off. Everything is... One guy called me before Shabbos. He had a problem. Could he go into his room? Really? If he goes in, could he go out? Could he... What's the halacha? We came up with an idea. I told him to get a helium balloon. He put it in the room, and because it was floating around the room, the sensor sensed the movement. So him moving in and out of the room didn't change the situation. So sometimes you have to think out of the box. But this is going to become more and more of a question, and a lot of this is traced back to the Mishkan. How the Melacha was done in the Mishkan, how it wasn't done in the Mishkan, what's called the Melacha Smasha. But Shabbos and the Mishkan are very, very unified. Why is the Beis HaMikdash and Shabbos so connected? So I want to share with you an idea, a concept, an observation that I made years ago, and it's really found in the Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin talks about the Satan coming between two people every Erev Shabbos to make a fight. If you ever noticed, most shul politics, I mean, this shul BRS doesn't have politics, but shuls that have politics, Shabbos is the time where it reaches its peak. That's the best time. I had a guy in my shul when I came to the shul 26 years ago. He was involved in every political thing that happened in the shul. Everything was a fight. Anything that could be a fight, anything that was a suffix, maybe a fight could be created. He was there to create. He was a genius. Because he took things that you would think you could never make a fight out of it. He managed. He made a fight out of everything. I went over to him, I said, listen, do me a favor. Let's say the guy's name is Beryl. I said, Beryl, I want you to accept upon yourself one day a week, no politics. No politics means no negative words about any Jews. No bringing up, no shul issues, no home issues, no business issues, no community, nothing. One day. I said, I'm giving you 6 days. 6 days you can be free. One day. He said, okay, Rabbi, you got a deal. What day is it going to be? I said, Shabbos. Shabbos. We shook on it. This is a ma'aseh shoyu. We shook on the deal. After 3-4 weeks, first of all, shul was mamish, a different place. He comes to me after 3-4 weeks. He goes, Rabbi, you dripped me. You fooled me. All the fights are on Shabbos. All the fights on Shabbos. He's right. I did fool. But Baruch Hashem, it made an impact on him. It didn't make an impact on him. We find that every Friday night, before Shabbos comes in, a woman lights candles. One of the reasons for those candles is Shalom Bayit. So if Yitzhak Hutner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, questions, why only Friday night? Doesn't a person have to have shalom bayis the whole week? Would any rabbi say that you could fight with your wife 6 days a week? Sheishes yomim tachloi k'mishtacha ubiyam ashvi tishpas. This doesn't make sense. That's a Yitzhak Kutner's question. So I'll tell you what the idea is. The holiness that we have, the Vilna Gaon points out, is separated in three areas. There's Kedushas Adam, the Kedusha that the nation of the Jewish people have. There's Kedushas HaMokom, that's the Kedusha of place, like Eretz Yisrael has Kedusha. Beis HaMikdash has Kedusha. Yerushalayim has Kedusha, right? And then there's also what we call Kedushas HaZman, Shabbos, Yom Tov. So the Kedusha that was given to our nation is broken up to three components. The Vilna Gaon says, people, Adam, Zman, and Makom. But there's a fascinating observation. Each one of these Kedushas has 10 layers. If you look at the Mishnah Kedushin, it says, Asara Yuchsin Olam Yibavel. There's 10 levels within the Jewish people. Kahan and Levi and Yisrael and Mamzerim, Chalol and Geir. There's 10 levels of people when it comes to Yichus. What about place, territory? The Mishnah at the beginning of Kalim says, Eser Kedushas Hayim. There's 10 Kedushas. And the Mishnah explains that outer perimeter, the inner perimeter, cities that are surrounded by a wall, Yerushalayim, then within Yerushalayim, the Harabayas, the Azorah, 10 Kedushas. Now what about Zman? Also, 10 Kedushas. There's Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the three Yom Teva, right? Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, Rosh Chodesh, okay? You have Hanukkah, you have Purim, you have Chol Hamoed, you have 10 layers of Kedushas. But what becomes mysterious, 10 is the number by Klal Yisrael, so we know that 10 is a number, 10 is a union. But what's mysterious is that each one of these numbers is missing a number 11. The Mishnah Kedushin does not list of 10th, 11th level, and that's the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol has more restrictions, right? Zman has an added Kedusha, it's called Shabbos. That's another Kedusha, it's number 11. And the Beis HaMikdash has the Kodesh Kadosh. That's not listed. The Lefnai V'Lefnim is not listed. So really, each one of these unions have 10, but there's a number 11. And the Vilna Gaon explains that the reason why that number 11 is not counted is because that is the source of the Kedushas. So the source of Kedushas, Klal Yisrael, came from the Kohen Gadol. The source of Kedushas, Eretz Yisrael, came from the Kodesh Kedoshim, from the innards of the Beis HaMikdash. And the source of Kedushas Hazman, of time, comes from Shabbos. Every Yom Tov is called Shabbos Shabbosim. Every Yom Tov is called Shabbosim. Shabbos is the source. But what's even more fascinating is that the sources of each one of these Kedushas is Achdus and Klal Yisrael. The inner of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kodesh Kedoshim, got the Kedusha from the Oren. The Oren, the Medrash says in Shir HaShirim, Tocho Ratzuf Ava. The Aron got its Kedusha from the Achdus of Klal Yisrael, from the Luchas, which we accepted in unison, together. That's the Kedusha. The Kohen Gadol got his Kedusha, the Gemara says in Shabbos Kuf Lamedtes, V'samach B'libei, from the Achdus of Moshe and Aaron. That's how we got the Kedusha of the Kohen Gadol. So that's already Mokum. Zman, says the Vilna Goyen, the Zohar HaKadosh says that Shabbos is a Zman of Achdus. The Kulon Misatrin, we notice something called Neshama Yisera. The Zohar explains there's one large Neshama Yisera that connects the entire Jewish people. Kulon Misatrin B'Nishmas Anachadet. We all envelope in that one Neshama. The Shemi Shmuel writes, that's the reason why on Shabbos there's no need to go up to the Beis HaMikdash, Ola Regel, you know, the Yom Tovim, you have to go. Because Shabbos, we are one Neshama. So we're all connected. There's no need to go up. Can you imagine? So the unification of the nation is Achdus of Klal Yisrael. That's what we are. And that's, Shabbos is where it comes to the climax, it's one neshama. That's the reason why the Satan comes Shabbos, to create fights. Because he knows the source of Shabbos is Achdus. He comes to eat us up at our core. We know that the existence of the Beis HaMikdash can only be if there's Achdus amongst us. If there's no Achdus amongst us, there can't be a Beis HaMikdash. So that's why the Beis HaMikdash is connected to Shabbos. Because you can't have a Beis HaMikdash unless Klal Yisrael share in the Neshama. Unless we unify, then you could have a Beis HaMikdash. That's why Shabbos and the Beis HaMikdash unite. And that explains why it's constantly brought in Shabbos with the Beis HaMikdash. It's all about. Now I want to tell you a fascinating thing that the Chofetz Chaim told this Talmud of his. He said, and it reminds me of the Kotzke. The Kotzke was a Rebbe, Chassidish Rebbe, who was as sharp as a blade. I mean, he always had a precise statement that was was volumes. There was a fella, just to give you an idea of the sharpness of the Kotzke, there was a fella in those days of the Kotzke, to get somebody to go to Israel was very complex. With the boats and the expenses, if you made it, there was a guy, he wanted to be buried in Israel. That was his thing. He wanted it. Now it's very common. In those days it was uncommon. So basically he wanted that the rest of his money that he has, that he's going to leave to his family, should be used to bury him in Israel. His wife said, you know, it's not really fair to the kids or me. You know, we got to live. You want to be buried in Israel, I understand. But he says, no, I really feel it's the right thing. I want to be buried. She says, let's go to the Kotzka. Okay? So they went to the Kotzka. So the Kotzka listens to him, listens to his wife, and he turns to me, he goes, Zizakut, she's talking Sechel. What's with you? What's in your mind? He says, you know, I once read a medrash that when there's going to be Techiyas HaMeisim, when people are going to get up, the people that are outside of Israel are going to have to roll there through channels and whatever, tunnels. Who knows, maybe that's what Hamas is doing over there, right? They're making tunnels. Hopefully it'll be for the Gula, right? And people that are buried in Israel, they're just going to get up. They're not going to have to roll. And we are taught that the rolling is not going to be geschmack. It's not first class. This is economy minus class. So this is something, he says, I don't want to roll. So the Kotzka looks at him, he goes,